A typology is a compared and contrast of events and objects and people of the Old Testament to our Redeemer and redemption in the New Testament. So that's what we're going to be looking at for the next couple months. So just a quick review of what we talked about last week. A type in the Bible is generally used to denote a resemblance between something past or present and something in the future. And the thing that it refers to in the future is called an antitype. Okay, Adam is an explicit example of this. He's referred to Christ as a type. The physical man contrasted to the spiritual man, as I think Dwayne pointed out to us. That's kind of the main picture that we get between the two. Hebrews 10 and 1 also uses the word shadow. Shadow is like a type. Shadow is something that only gives us an outline of the real object instead of the very image. So, shadows of things to come. A good example of that would be the priestly duties of the law of Moses versus Christ as the high priest. Okay. We talked about Abel. Abel is the first righteous martyr. And why was Abel murdered? How was he killed? Out of what? What caused it? All right, jealousy. And Christ was executed out of the same motive, wasn't he? He was also killed out of jealousy. Now today we're going to start with one of Cain and Abel's sons. And it's going to be the replacement. We're going to talk about Seth, who's the replacement son of Abel. Now, we did discuss, you know, about Genesis chapter 3, verse 15, about the serpents would basically bruise the heel of humans, and his head would eventually be crushed and by the seed of the woman. So we'll start with this, talking about Seth. And of course, it's through Seth's lineage that we are led to Christ. And he was also born of the seed of Mary. After Christ, no more lineage of seed is kept that I know of. Well, why is that? You know, we had this lineage that goes from way back, from the beginning of time, all the way to Christ. But we have no more lineage kept. And what's the answer? Why was the lineage kept? What was that?
The record of Christ.
Yeah. Yeah, it was a record of this promise that was made way back to Eve. Okay, that through the seed of the woman, Satan would be crushed. All right, and so it's not necessary anymore. Christ is the end-all, the solution to the secret of life, isn't he? So because we have the full gospel revealed to us, we understand that through the seed of the woman, many children would be born that would eventually yield a Savior. Okay, and of course we have those records in the Bible of all the way from Adam all the way to Christ. We won't necessarily turn to those, but we know that they're there. When Eve gave birth to Cain, she made this comment. She said, "I have acquired a man from the Lord." Why did she say that in such a way? I don't know if we know for sure, but you get the impression that maybe Eve was hoping that this was the sort of God's fulfillment of a Redeemer that was to come. Of course, God's time is not in our times. You know, how many times do we think that this is going to happen right away? Okay, So we don't know exactly the thought that Eve had, but possibly, you know, she was looking forward to this child that would bring about a redeemer after their sin, and of course they sinned, and then their pronouncement was pronounced upon them. But we know that Cain was killed. Or excuse me, Abel was killed by Cain. All right, so, and then Cain was banished, put a mark on himself, and he was driven out away from them. And so Seth came along. Genesis 4:26, and as for Seth, to him also it says, a son was born, and he named him Enosh. And what do we know about after this son Enosh was born? It was mentioned last week. What did mankind begin to do after Enosh was born? Well, in 4:26, it says, then men began to call on the name of the Lord. So this whole scenario about Cain killing Abel and then Seth taking Abel's place, and then this comment about after Seth also was born this child named Enosh, and it says, then men began to call on the name of the Lord. What do we know about calling on the name of the Lord? What does it mean to call upon the name of the Lord? What's that?
That would be to worship
him. Okay, yeah. They begin to recognize God and pray to God and to try to shape their life around godly things.
What would the difference be in that and the sacrifices that Abel did?
You mean after? Yeah, after.
I mean, obviously they must have done more than just offer a sacrifice, but they may have done more than that in the time of Abel too. We really don't know.
That's a very good question that you asked. I don't know how to answer that. Anybody have a thought on that? Men began to call on the name of the Lord. What's that? Okay.
Somehow, I'm sure was the one that taught Abel, right?
Right. Abel was a righteous person. Okay. We know that for sure.
Maybe calling on the name of the Lord meant praying to God. Maybe they offered sacrifices, but maybe they didn't pray until this point.
Okay. All right. Somehow, I just get the feeling that there's something a little bit more about their worship of God than maybe it was before. I don't know how to explain that.
It doesn't really say, but it may indicate that their hearts were a little bit more in tune to God.
Yeah.
Just doing what God told them to do.
Yeah.
Them wanting to reach up to Him and please Him. I don't know.
Well, you know, we find Seth mentioned in the lineage of Christ. Luke 3:38 talks about the son of Enosh, the son of Seth, the son of Adam, and the son of God. So we know that through Seth, there was some, you know, he was in this lineage of Christ. All right. What happened to the lineage of Cain? Anybody know anything about Cain? Well, Genesis 4:17, it mentions that he had a wife, and he had a child named Enoch, and he built a city, and he named that city after his son Enoch. And then we also, it mentions about maybe seven generations of Cain in those following passages there. And we do know that one of the descendants of Cain named Lamech killed a man as well. Of course, we do know that even if you're from a good lineage, you can go astray and do bad things. But it's through the promise of Eve that she will bear children, and from the seed the serpent's head would be bruised. And we know that prophecy fulfills more than just. We do know that, and we mentioned this last week, that women want to kill every snake that they see, and we're talking women in general, okay? Okay, and men are very much like that too, lots of ways, maybe not as much as women. But we do know that through the birth of Jesus, Satan would be ultimately crushed and defeated. And Revelations 12, 9 through 13 talks about this, talks about the defeat of Satan. Luke 1, 26 through 31 says, "Now in the sixth month, the angel Gabriel was sent by God to a city of Galilee named Nazareth, to a virgin betrothed to a man whose name was Joseph of the house of David. The virgin's name was Mary, and having come in, the angel said to her, 'Rejoice, highly favored one, the Lord is with you. Blessed are you among women.' But when she saw him, she was troubled at his saying, and considered what manner of greeting this was. Then the angel said to her, 'Do not be afraid, Mary, for you have found favor with God. And behold, you will conceive in your womb and bring forth a son, and shall call his name Jesus.'" So there is the beginning to the end, you might say, so to speak. This lineage started all the way back with Seth through Adam and Eve, and then it's worked its way all the way to Christ being born and becoming the Savior of all mankind. Anybody want to make any other comments about Seth?
I don't have one specifically about him. Something you said earlier about the genealogy and why it's not important after the time of Christ. And the physical genealogy is not important anymore to God. Like you said, because the Jewish nation was... That genealogy was exterminated when the Jews they weren't wiped out, but they were, Jerusalem was taken.
Yeah, there.
And that lineage was broken, but it doesn't matter anymore. And yet we see people who are obsessed with their genealogy. And Paul mentions that in the New Testament. He condemns that, endless genealogy.
Oh.
Kind of wrong, but there's people
right.
that are absolutely obsessed with tracing their lineage back as far as they can.
Yeah.
And it really doesn't matter.
And I suspect that what Paul was talking about is that these people that were obsessed with endless genealogies were trying to make themselves look like they were something because of their genealogical background. Yeah.
He does condemn
it. Yes, Eddie?
My thought was that as far as the genealogy is concerned, it ended with Christ. He was the seed that came. So he didn't have no children after him.
Other than us. Yeah. And we know where we're from.
One other thing, this is going all the way back to your whole subject. We were talking about parables.
Yeah.
Found it interesting that the word parable is used some 57 times in the Bible, and there's a few times in the Old Testament, but the rest of them are in the Gospels. After the Gospels, you don't find the word parable.
After the Gospel, you don't find the word parable. Okay.
So after the church started, there's no more need for parables, I guess.
Yeah. All right. Anybody else have any thoughts you want to add? We're going to change gears a little bit, and we're going to consider the passage in 1 Peter 3, 18 and 22. I'd mentioned this in our study on last week about this business about the antitype. 1 Peter 3:18 through 22 says, "For Christ also suffered once for sins, the just for the unjust, that he might bring us to God, being put to death in the flesh, but made alive by the Spirit, by whom also he went and preached to the spirits in prison, who formerly were disobedient when once the divine long suffering waited in the days of Noah, while the ark was being prepared, in which a few, that is, eight souls were saved through water. There is also an antitype, which now saves us, baptism, not the removal of the filth of the flesh, but the answer of a good conscience toward God through the resurrection of Jesus Christ, who has gone into heaven and is at the right hand of God, angels and authorities and powers having been made subject to him." Well, our study is about types. The flood that floated Noah's ark is a type of baptism, which is referred to as the antitype. Now, because of Noah's righteousness, God saved Noah and his family. And after years of being surrounded by violence and corruption, they would be set free from that. Wickedness would be washed from the face of the earth, at least for, what shall we say, one bright and shining moment? We don't know how long that things went on without sin getting a foothold and starting all over again. Genesis, starting in chapter 6, verse 6, it says, "And the Lord was sorry that he had made man on the earth, and he was grieved in his heart. The Lord said, I will destroy man whom I have created from the face of the earth, both man and beast, creeping things and birds of the air, for I am sorry that I have made them. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord." This is the genealogy of Noah. Noah was a just man, perfect in his generation. Noah walked with God. And Noah begat three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. The earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. So God looked upon the earth, and indeed it was corrupt. For all flesh had corrupted their way on earth. And God said to Noah, "The end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them. And behold, I will destroy them with the earth." And after this conversation, God gave Noah in very specific instructions on how to build the ark. Well, why was he supposed to build the ark? What was the purpose of building an ark?
Salvation.
Salvation from what, Dwayne?
Flood.
From what?
Flood.
From the flood, yes. Verse 17, "And behold, I myself am bringing floodwaters on the earth." So you're going to need this big giant boat. He says, "I'm bringing floodwaters on the earth to destroy from under heaven all flesh in which is the breath of life. Everything that is on the earth shall die. But I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall go into the ark, you, your sons, your wives, and your sons' wives with you. And of every living thing of all flesh, you shall bring two of every sort into the ark to keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female, of the birds after their kind, of the animals after their kind, and of every creeping thing on the earth after its kind. Two of every kind will come to you to keep them alive." So, the question is, in what way is the story of the ark a type of baptism? Well, so we have to ask ourselves, what exactly did the ark do? Well, what was it that kept the boat afloat above the sinful people of the time? What was it? Well, it was the water that kept it up, wasn't it? And I try to imagine what that must have been like for all those people that were outside the ark. And is This deluge of water coming in the form of rain for 40 days, nonstop. And we've had some rain here just in the last couple weeks. And you know how gloomy it is to have rain for about a week. On and off, we've had rain for about a week there, and then, well, maybe a little bit more. Maybe got a little sunshine, and then kind of back in that same pattern again. Well, you know what that's like. Just imagine 40 days of solid, nonstop rain. And not to mention that the waters from the deep, from the springs, were coming up. Imagine what the people would have been doing trying to save themselves. Maybe clawing at the sides of the ark. I don't know. I know they would have been scrambling to try to find the highest place. But this water was overwhelming. And so the water is what kept the boat afloat. So the agent, this water, did what? What did it do to sin? Well, it did away with sin, didn't it? Everything was killed. So it did away with the sin. At the same time, the same water that did away with sin saved them from the wickedness that existed. Now, no doubt Noah was probably made fun of and tormented in lots of ways all those years that he was building the ark. And he preached to the people and he tried to tell them there's something going to come and that you need to change your ways, but the people didn't. I'm sure they just continually made fun of him. And now who's laughing? Nobody's laughing now. Okay, nobody's making fun now. Noah is saved in the ark from the water. And so we ask ourselves, what takes away the sin that we have? What does the gospel of Christ tell us? Okay, Romans 6 and 3, starting with 6, verse 3. Or do you not know that as many of us were baptized into Christ, Jesus, were baptized into His death, therefore we were buried with Him through baptism into death, just as Christ was raised from the dead by the glory of the Father, even so we also should walk in a newness of life. So we can see very easily, as we study the Scripture, we can see how that this scenario with the flood was an anti-type, or that baptism is an anti-type to the ark and the floodwaters that destroyed the people. Anybody else want to make any comment about that anti-type?
I think of it, because it doesn't say they were saved through the ark, it says they were saved through water. I would just vision that as that the water is washing away the sin that is in the world. And then in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, it tells us that when Moses led them through the Red Sea, that's a type of baptism as well.
Okay.
1 Corinthians chapter 10, moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that all of our fathers were under the cloud, all passed through the sea, all were baptized into Moses in the cloud and in the sea. All ate of the spiritual food and drank of the same spiritual drink, for they drank of the spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. So it's another type of baptism
is that when they crossed the Red Sea and the cloud that was over them, its clouds are made of water. Okay.
Just one more place that we can take people and let them see that, you know, in this same situation, the sin that was in their past and the wickedness that was following them was washed away when they left Egypt.
All right. Very good.
Water also is a form of cleansing. The earth was cleansed of sin.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. It's like the number one cleansing agent, isn't it? Of all the things that we have in the earth, water is a cleansing agent. All right. Well, before I get past the flood, I want to mention a character that was before the flood. And I think we could consider as a type of Christ. And I'll give you a hint. This character I'm thinking about is only briefly mentioned in just a few places in the Old and New Testament. Who do you think I'm thinking of? Not mentioned very much. Don't know a lot about him. But he was very, very righteous. No. Not talking about Melchizedek. Enoch. Yes, let's take a look at Enoch for just a little bit. Genesis 5:18 through 24. This was a genealogy there. It said Jared lived 162 years and begot Enoch. After he begot Enoch, Jared lived 800 years and had sons and daughters. And so all the days of Jared were 962 years, and he died. Enoch lived 65 years and begot Methuselah. And after he begot Methuselah, Enoch walked with God 300 years and had sons and daughters. So all the days of Enoch were 365 years. And Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. Now this is really an interesting happenstance, I guess we might say, that doesn't, in a way, doesn't seem to get much attention. But I just want us to think about what that might have been like back then when that happened. Okay. First of all, as we already mentioned, walk with God. This definitely means that Enoch was godly. Amos 3:3 says, "Can two walk together unless they are agreed?" So unless you're agreed with God and you do what God asks you, you can't walk with God. So walking with God is being in constant fellowship and delighting in doing God's will in all things instead of doing your own thing. And of course, we know that when it got down to the time of Noah, everybody was kind of doing their own thing except what God wanted them to do. Because it talks about the intent and thoughts of their heart were continually evil. And we don't know how many people were alive then, but I think we can say there were thousands and thousands of people, maybe millions. Maybe there was more than a million people, I don't know. But there was lots of people, and only 8 people were saved. So that gives you an idea how wicked God. Okay? So Enoch walked with God, and he was not, for God took him. Hebrews 11:5 says, "By faith Enoch was taken away so that he did not see death, and was not found because God had taken him. For before he was taken, he had this testimony that he pleased God." Just pretty simple words, but you can't say it any better than that, can you? That he pleased God. Now, here's a thought that I had, and I did a little research on this. After Adam and Eve sinned, think about this. What better illustration of eternal hope to people that have seen nothing but death? Since Adam and Eve have sinned, they've seen nothing but death. Now, we need to recognize that Seth would have still been alive when this event occurred. And I got to thinking that maybe Adam and Eve were still alive, but I looked at a timeline. I couldn't think what I was wanting to say. I looked at a timeline and tried to do some lining up on that, and it appears to me that Adam and Eve may have been dead by then, but Seth, their son, was still alive. Okay? And no doubt he had heard stories from his mom and dad as how things were before they had sinned. Now, we don't think about that, but let's just stop and think. So you have children, and you know how children ask their mom and dad, "Well, what was it like when you guys were dating?" Or "What was it like, you know, where did you meet each other?" And all those kind of questions. We've all had questions to our parents about that. And no doubt, in my mind, Adam and Eve have talked about what it was like before they sinned. And so here's Seth, and he knows that because of their sin, they all die. And now we have this incident where Enoch is just whisked away and taken to God.
Enoch, by his very name, is a 2 Timothy 2:15 type of God. The name Enoch means dedicated.
Dedicated, all right. All right.
So is he more righteous than his ancestors? Is that why God took him, or was it just God trying to make a statement here? What was the purpose of doing that? I don't know if we can fully know, but...
Yeah, that's a good question, isn't it? Why did God do this at this time? And I get the feeling that it was just to interject a little bit of hope and to keep people looking for the time that we'll all be able to do that. I don't, it's hard to know how much these people understood and knew. Okay? But no doubt, Enoch and his friends may have been present when that happened. They may have known, Seth may have known Enoch. We don't know. Maybe he lived several miles away and never saw it happen, didn't know anything about it. But I get the impression that good news travels fast. And I get the impression that this might have been a ray of hope that God has given these people. Now, Enoch lived less than half of the life of his dad, but life lost on earth is life gained in heaven. If you are someone that honors God, that's something for us to think about. That if you honor God, it doesn't matter if you live to be 30 or 60 or whatever, the quicker you die, the quicker you're whisked away to heaven. And matter of fact, there's a scripture, let's see, I don't know if I can think of it, but it basically, I think it's Jeremiah, but I'm not sure. But basically it says that we don't really give it much thought that when a person dies, you know, he's being rewarded. Anybody know what verse I'm talking about? It's not where I thought it was. Oh well. But anyway, you get the idea.
Okay. Over in the book of Jude, you get a good picture of what Enoch's position was. He was the seventh from Adam, and he prophesied about all of this wickedness. This unbelief was just like you said, unbelievably prevalent in all the world. And here he came along and prophesied against them and says, execute a judgment on all of them.
Yes. I've got that coming up right here, so I'll mention that, Dwayne. But that's all right. I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's right. We do know exactly his position. Let me finish my thought. I kind of interrupted myself. So Enoch lived half the life of his dad, and Jesus walked in this earth only about a third of the time that the Apostle John walked on the earth. John was, we think, somewhere in his 90s. Jesus was 33, so approximately a third of the time. So Jesus did temporarily die, but since he had walked with God, what happened to Jesus? Well, he was taken to heaven also, wasn't he? John 11, 21 through 26, we have the account there where Martha's brother has been sick. Said to Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would have not died. Even now I know that whatever you ask of God, God will give you. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha said to him, well, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection of the last day. Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live even if he dies. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? And then after being dead for 4 days, Lazarus was brought back to life and many Jews became believers. Now, both Enoch and Christ prophesied of judgment to come on all those who are ungodly. And this is what Dwayne was referring to. Jude 1:14 says, now Enoch, the seventh from Adam, prophesied about these men, saying, behold, the Lord comes with 10,000 of his saints to execute judgment on all, to convict all who are ungodly among them, and all their ungodly deeds which they have committed in an ungodly way, and of all the harsh things which ungodly sinners have spoken against him. So, Enoch was a pretty special person, and obviously Enoch was somewhat of a, I think we could say, a prophet, and he prophesied of these things that were to come, about what would happen to ungodly sinners. John, the 5th chapter, verse 25 through 30, Jesus says, "Truly I say to you, an hour is coming, and now is, when the dead will hear the voice of the Son of God, and those who hear will live. For just as the Father has life in Himself, even so He gave to the Son also to have life in Himself. And He gave Him authority to execute judgment, because He is the Son of Man. Do not marvel at this, for an hour is coming in which all who are in the tombs will hear His voice. It will come forth, those who did the good deeds to resurrection of life, those who committed the evil deeds to a resurrection of judgment. I can do nothing on my own initiative. As I hear, I judge, and my judgment is just, because I do not seek my own will, but the will of Him who sent me." Anybody else have any thoughts about Enoch being a type of Christ? Well, I've got just a few minutes to introduce my next character that we're going to look at, and then I'll have to dismiss our classes. So as we travel through this time capsule, so to speak, we're going to talk about Noah. And the thing that as I consider Noah as a type of Christ, here's something I want you to think about for next week. Genesis 5, 28 and 29, this is what it says. "Lamech lived 182 years and became the father of a son. Now he called his name Noah, saying, 'This one will give us rest from our work and from the toil of our hands arising from the ground which the Lord has cursed.'" So I want you to think about this for next week. In what way did Noah give these people rest from their toil and labor? Now, we do know that Adam, because of his sin, what was his punishment? What about the ground? Going to have to work extra hard now, because it's going to bring up all kinds of weeds, thorns and thistles, and etc. And it's going to make life rough. So in what way did Noah give the people rest from their toil and labor? Just something for us to think about. We'll discuss that next week. Another verse you might look at is right after the flood and after they got off the ark. I want you to look at that passage that right after Noah makes a sacrifice. I need you to read that passage right there and consider that in context with what we just read there, that is why his father gave him that name. We'll take a short break and then we'll reconvene. Thanks for your comment.